Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
It's time to turn off the lights and turn on the dark.
Chilling tales for dark nights.
Good evening, listener. You're listening to Chilling Tales for Dark Nights. On tonight's edition, we invite you to leave behind your safe reality and descend with us into the frightening depths of the most terrifying imaginations with an audio adaptation of frightening fiction about petrifying perspectives. I'm your host, Paul J. McSorley, and tonight and every other Wednesday night, I'll be your guide as we traverse the dimly lit corridors of your darkest dreams. Joining us tonight to help bring to life the frightening fiction of Dirk Stevens is myself, voice talent Paul J. McSorley. Now get your ticket ready, take your seat in our theater of the minds, and brace yourself. It's time to turn off the lights and turn on the dark. Our tale this evening is written by Dirk Stevens and is performed by me, Paul J. McSorley. We've got something a little different for you this week. This tale is told from multiple perspectives of the same event. Now, without further ado, I present to you, Prey. Early one morning, a stray lamb stood by the bank of a woodland pond. A hungry wolf passed that way hunting. Spotting the lamb, he paused and sat down. At any other time, he would have snapped up the lamb in a heartbeat. But there, beside the water, caught in a shaft of sunlight, she looked so innocent, so pure, the wolf felt that he ought to have some excuse for taking her. And so, with his head low, he strode up to the lamb and cleared his throat. "You're trespassing, little lamb, and stealing my water." The lamb, too young to know danger, replied honestly, "I was born just there." She nodded at a thicket nearby. "Only a short while ago, and I've never tasted anything but my mother's milk." Aesop. Girl. "I creep closer to the water's edge. Mud squishes between my toes, and I shrink low behind the cattails, waiting for the sun to peek up over the trees. Any moment now, goosebumps prickle down my arms. The darkness ends. It takes its bow. I hug my knees against my chest to keep from shaking. I did everything Mother taught me. Mixed the herbs into the milk, poured it in a saucer, laid it out on the big flat rock, and propped up the little silver mirror beside it. Now all I have to do is be quiet, sit still, and wait. That's the hard part. But they'll be here." I tug the hem of my skirt around my fingers and squeeze it tight between my fists. "I know they will. The clouds turn pink, the sky blue, and the sun pokes up over the treetops. It kisses the surface of the pond, sending twinkling stars dancing across the ripples. Little candles that float free of the water and hover, stretching and yawning over a hazy sea of towering cedars and glowing mushrooms. Not a reflection, and not this world. A window to another, as if I'm upside down underground, staring up through a hole. A hole to another place. A magical world. Avalon. Fairies flit between the giant ferns and mushrooms of Avalon, then dip through the surface of the water and float into mine. Dozens of them. Hundreds. Like fireflies. I bite my lip to keep from squealing as I watch the little women flap their mayfly wings, rising and falling above each ripple of the pond. Each glowing with a color, a light all their own. As if they were made of light. Without turning my head, I glance over at the saucer of milk. A single blue fairy floats by, pauses, and flutters closer. "Go on," I mouth, not even daring to breathe. Fairies are flighty creatures, easily spooked, but vain. A single sound, any hint of surprise, and they'll vanish. But if they see their reflection, they can't leave. They'll spend hours hovering over a spoon, combing their fingers through their hair, making kissy faces, or pulling their dresses around to get just the right look. Once that starts, it's almost impossible for them to pull away, even if you sit down and talk to them. But they don't expect a good conversation. They're too busy posing and primping. They won't listen, and they won't talk back, but at least they won't run away. Or that's what Mother said. I've never actually tried talking to them before. The little blue fairy's toes tap the rock beside the saucer. Her wings droop as her other foot lands. She folds her wings behind her back like a cloak, bends down, and sticks her hand into the milk. A shimmering light pulls my gaze to the edge of the rock, to a cloud of fairies circling, watching her. A dozen or so drift closer. Several stretch out their feet to land. My heartbeat pounds in my ears. So many fairies all at once. I go back to watching Little Blue. She lifts a cupped hand from the saucer, but then a soft breeze ripples the cattails, and a tail of hair falls over my eyes. I can't see. My hand twitches, but I don't dare move to brush it aside. So, quiet as I can, I pucker my lips and blow. The tail swings to the side, and then right back. Slowly, ever so slowly, I relax the grip on my skirt, catch the tail in my fingers, and hook it back behind my ear. The rock comes back into view, but she's gone. I glance out over the pond, but there's no shimmer, no lights, no fairies. Slowly, I raise my head over the cattails to see if they move to the far side of the pond, but no. The only reflection in the water is the sky, oaks, and cattails. The world around me. My shoulders slump. I screwed up. Avalon is gone. Man. Stupid root. I rolled onto my side. Another stick pokes me in the ribs, but at least it's in a new spot. Squirming off to the side, I close my eyes and try to go back to sleep, but it's no use. I can't get her face out of my head. I force my eyes to open. Everything's a blur, a tangle of twigs and sticks. Nothing I can make sense of. And I really don't feel like trying. A belch rumbles up from my stomach. Something like the taste of a badger's armpit dipped in garlic fills my mouth, and my head throbs. I blow a long breath to clear the taste and groan. Another hangover. That explains it. I must have crawled into a slash pile to sleep it off. It wouldn't be the first time. Groaning, I rub my eyes and try to remember what happened last night. Dingle. The word pounds through me head like a bass drum, but I can't remember if it was the name of a town, pub, or the whiskey I drank. A rough edge scrapes against my eyelid. I pull my hand back and blink at the scabs covering my knuckles, the dried blood coating my palms. My fingers probe the edges of my lips, my nose, and eyes, but there's no soreness, no swelling. If I was in a fight, it couldn't have been much of one. Flexing against the blood on my hands, I think back, but keep it simple. Images, smells, sounds. The color red. A face pushes its way through my memory. A woman, her red hair pulled into pigtails. I take a deep breath and let the image come into focus. She's young, but her face looks older, careworn. She's wearing a white top and bodice. It leaves little to the imagination. I stare up at the sticks overhead and focus on the woman in my mind. I don't know her name, but for some reason I see her in a crowded room. She's laughing, but not her eyes. No, her eyes look tired. I let the memory play. She slips around the side of a table between two chairs. A hand grabs her backside. She turns and laughs.
Now, boys, hands to yourselves.
The hand slides around her waist and pulls her down on a man's lap. I look down at my fists. Now I remember. She was the barmaid. It's the man's blood on my knuckles. She's the one who gave me the whiskey. I squint back up at the sticks. One mystery solved, but that still doesn't tell me where I am. I chase the memory of the barmaid, but it's more distant now, further in the past. After the fight, she sat with me a while until the whiskey was gone, then asked me to share the night with her. I didn't. Pretty though she was, her face was far too worn for my liking. She thanked me for my chivalry, kissed my cheek, and I stumbled out the door. I think I recall a horseless carriage steaming by. Or, at least I remember its huffing wheeze, the way its mist curled in the flickering glow of the street lamps. The street itself was empty. Only a few stragglers, drunks like me, and a girl. I lick my lips. The girl. The one I can't get out of my head. Too young to be alone, at least at that hour. 8 or 9. She couldn't have been alone. I focus on the street, on her. The effort sends a wave of pain ricocheting between my temples. I clap my palms over my eyes to steady myself, but yes, I do remember a family. The man was a thin fellow. He wore an expensive-looking suit and tall dark hat. His wife, a dark frilled dress and bustle. But their daughter, the way she turned to look at me, sheltered by her mother's arm, her wide blue eyes peering out from under her hood, her rosy cheeks and tight rounded nose, so young, so painfully beautiful. I remember now, following her from the shadows, cursing the cold and the cloak she wore that covered her, that hid her. The way her father glanced at me over his shoulder, leaned and whispered into her mother's ear. The girl and her mother hurried on, but the man paused, stuffed a hand inside his jacket and turned to face me. What can I do for you, my good fellow? I glanced down at him, his smooth cheeks and boyish chin, then back at the girl, just in time to watch her and her mother round a corner and vanish. Nothing. Made to step around him. He moved ever so slightly, blocking my path. His hand still tucked inside his jacket. Then may I suggest your fortunes lie in another direction, friend? Friend? I snorted at the thought. Such a funny little man, playing tough. Standing so close I could have snapped his neck like a dry twig before his next heartbeat, no matter what he had in his jacket.
Hey, it's Bubba Wallace from 2311 Racing. You know what it feels like forever? Sitting on a plane waiting for takeoff. Good thing I've got Chumba Casino. With daily boosts and social casino games on tap, this is the kind of fun that makes time fly. Why not turbocharge your downtime? Play now at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
How old is she? His eyes narrowed. His mouth pulled into a tight frown. A hard skull betrayed only by the bead of sweat that ran down his temple. 10. His voice cracked. 10, I muttered, craning my neck, hoping to catch a glimpse of her. But she was already out of sight. But not far. A real beauty. It wouldn't take but a second or two to catch up. A belch rumbles through my mouth, thick with the taste of rotten eggs, and the memory's gone. Wincing, I blow the taste clear, lower my hands, and stare up at the sticks overhead.
but now that I can see a little better, I think I know where I am. There are sticks all right, but still on the tree and full of needles. I'm not in a slash pile. I'm under the skirt of some pine. I take in the trunk, the twigs and needles, and finally, a small gap between the branches. A tuft of grass, the outline of a bush, and a few trees beyond. Little more than shadows, but wild and untrimmed. The forest. I jolt up, my head spins, and I flop down on my hands. Bile rises in my throat. I swallow, unable to take my eyes from the dim light growing outside. I'm in the bloody forest. But how far? Not even waiting for the world to stop spinning, I crawl for the light. Sunlight peeks over the tops of the trees as I clear the branches. Dew hangs heavy on the brush and soaks through my pants. I rock back on my feet as the scent of bog water crashes in. The sound of frogs, birds, but no hiss of steam. No rhythmic pulse of machines. No hint of civilization at all. Wobbling, I force myself to stand. I had forgotten how loud the forest can be. Louder than the city. I turn to face the sun mirrored in a small pond on the edge of a clearing. Stretch my arms over my head to chase the kinks from my back. And that's when I see her. On the edge of the pond, crouched between the weeds, a little girl peering out over the water. I freeze. Oh, God! My heart skips the next beat. It's her, the girl from the village. Frantic, I scan the edge of the woods, the brush, the meadow. But there's no one here, just her and me. I close my eyes and think back to her father. His eyes hard, but full of fear. His hand in his jacket. But then, nothing. My eyes burst open. I can't remember what happened next, but her being here, with me, alone. My arms drop to my sides with a slap. The girl jumps to her feet and turns to face me in a single fluid motion, and that's when it hits me. She's not wearing her cloak. I swallow hard, but I don't remember seeing it under the tree. She must have lost it before. She smiles and my chest aches. She is beautiful. Her hair thick and golden. Her arms and legs thin and long. Her violet, almond-shaped eyes wide but not afraid. Violet, not blue? My chest relaxes. It's not her. I take a deep breath. This isn't the same girl. I didn't take her.
Hello.
The girl tips her head to the side like a curious puppy.
You don't look like a gnome.
I don't answer. I don't react at all. I shouldn't be here. Not with a girl. Not with a child. Lifting her skirt above her knees, she steps over a tuft of bulrushes and onto dry ground.
Where did you come from?
She's young. I nod toward the pine. No curves at all, and not even half my height. But her smile. The way she moves. So pure. So innocent. I swallow hard. I should go. I know I should. But I can't. I can't leave her. I haven't spoken to a young girl for so long now. Not since my arrest. She glances at the tree and her eyes twinkle.
Oh, I didn't know we were neighbors. I live just there.
She raises a slender arm and points to a path winding off into the brush.
We haven't been here long, just since solstice. That's probably why we haven't met.
Swallowing, I follow her finger to the path, but she's perfect. Absolutely flawless. I can't take my eyes off her. Her black vest, her thin white skirt, and bare feet. As if suddenly remembering her manners, she coughs out a laugh.
Well, I guess we met now.
She swings her hand in my direction, palm open.
It's nice to meet you.
I stare at her hand for a moment. If the constable got wind of this, if anyone saw us together. I glanced around at the edges of the forest, but there's no one here. No one to see. I take her hand. What's your name, lass?
Her entire palm tucks between my thumb and forefinger. Her skin's so warm against mine, so smooth. Tingles shoot up my arm. I glance back at the path and let her go. My mouth goes dry. I could take her around the waist with one hand. Do anything I liked. Even if she screamed, even if her mother heard, it'd be over before she ever got here. There's nothing she could do. Nothing at all. An almost musical laugh rips me from my thoughts.
My name is my own.
The girl pulls her bottom lip between her teeth as she watches me.
Names give power to those that know them. That's what mother says. That's why she keeps hers secret, even from my father. Even I don't know her real name.
Father. My head throbs. Of course she has a father. And where's your da now? The girl shrugs.
Gone.
Her gaze falls to the bottom of her dark vest. She plucks the end of a thread free from the seam and twists it between her fingers.
Your brain is wrinkly.
Her comment catches me off guard.
What? Your thoughts are all jumbled up.
She plucks the thread free, holds it up to the sun and stares at it for a moment. Then her gaze shifts from the thread to me.
Jumbled thoughts get all tangled up in your head and make your brain wrinkly. And then your face.
Her eyes focus back on the thread.
You don't know what you're thinking. That's the problem.
She gave the thread a twist and lets the breeze take it.
Not me. I always know exactly what I'm thinking.
She pushes her thick golden curls over her brow and leans forward.
See? No wrinkles.
She's utterly flawless, from her red full lips to her tiny toes. I raise my hand as if to check for wrinkles. Stretch out a finger, just to touch her one more time. But she's not Ariana. Her finger curls back on its own. Nope. I heave out a sigh and take a step back. Not one. She lets her hair fall across her brow and her moist lips pull into a frown.
You think it works the other way too? That smooth thoughts can make wrinkly skin smooth? Or do you think wrinkles are permanent?
My head spins. I don't know. It makes sense. At least with a hangover it does. I'd like to think we can fix our mistakes. But I know better. You can fix what's been broken, but you can't make it never have happened. Your ma's wrong. It ain't bad thoughts that make wrinkles. All old folks got them. Good or bad. I didn't have no wrinkles when I was a young pup neither. Now I's got them. It ain't thoughts that does it, girl. It's time.
Girl.
Time. The word tumbles from his mouth like sour milk, robbing his bloodshot eyes of the hunger they had as they traveled over my body. I stare at him, waiting for it to return, wondering if I misread something. He doesn't seem to be the same man I met a moment ago, almost as if the word itself, speaking it, changed him. I don't understand how, why, or the power that word holds over him, but something tells me it's important. Important enough to risk exposing myself. Cocking my head to the side, I gather the grass between my toes. Time makes leaves fall and snow blow, but that it makes your wrinkles grow was not a thing that I did know. The rhyme trips from my tongue before I realize what I'm saying. I add, is it? Quick as I can, and toss him as quizzical a look as I can manage. His addled mind seems to mull this over for a moment, then his head dips into a nod.
Aye, it is.
My jaw relaxes. Were he sober, I doubt such a slip would go unnoticed, but for the now, it matters not. Is that what happened to you? Time? He swallows, turns to face the pond, his expression haunted.
Time and...
His voice trails away, lost to whatever memories he sees in the ripples on the water. But I need to know. And what? I sing. Not even a true song, only the hint of melody. a slight nudge, just enough magic to lower his walls. He shakes his head, never taking his eyes from the water.
"And men, lass. Time and men."
Humming, I step close beside him, wave my hands before my eyes, and whisper low so he cannot hear. "Spirits of the earth and sky, show me what before him lie." The sway of the cattails is slow, the ripples fall still, and time itself jerks to a crawl. I lower my hands and gaze into the mirror of his past, to a time when his face held no wrinkles, his knuckles no scars, but the reflection is only that, a frozen moment in history, an image, nothing more. Time ceases its movement entirely, all but the surface of the water. I leave him standing there, frozen in time, walk to the edge of the pond, kneel, and dip my hand into the water. "Water come and water flow, ever onward forth ye flow. Carving rock and melting snow, show me now his heart and soul." Cupping my hand, I raise a scoop of water to my lips and drink. My head spins, the pond swirls, and my body thickens. I close my eyes, forget my name, who I am, where I'm from, even Avalon herself. I am Shay no longer, no longer banished to the mortal realm. I was born here, mortal, human, him. I remember my name now, his name, George. I am, was a teacher, a husband, a father. I remember how it was, my wife Sylvia, our daughter Ariana. I can see her now, in my own mind, a girl of 10, thin and full of life. The little cottage we called home, not far past the edge of town. Smell the bread Sylvia baked each morning. One memory, one day, shines brighter than the others, calls louder. I allow its voice to fill me until all reality drifts away like mist in the wind. Sylvia stands at the stove. Ariana sits at the table, tearing her cheese into tiny nuggets as she stares out into space, lost in one of her fancies. That girl. A smile pulls in my cheeks, likely chasing dragons again. Sylvia glances at me over her shoulder, at Ariana, then back at me. Smiling, she rolls her eyes and goes back to her work. I watch Ariana's blue eyes drift unfocused across the ceiling, dip a crust of bread into the yolk of one of my eggs, and pop it into my mouth. "Da?" she asks, still lost in fancy. "Is it true?" I swallow, trying not to laugh.
"Is what true, darling?"
"About the ice."
"Sweet, I'm afraid you're gonna have to give me a little more."
I take a sip of beer to wash down the bread, never taking my eyes off her. My beautiful daughter, her golden curls caught in the morning sun streaming through the window, her full, tiny lips pursed in concentration. At last, she shakes her head, seeing me for the first time since she sat down. "Do blue dragons breathe ice?"
"Don't know,"
I answer, trying to hide my smile behind my mug.
"Never met one."
She drops her cheese and squints at me. "Yes, you did. I know you did." I cough mid-swallow.
"Oh?"
I sputter, wipe my mouth dry on my sleeve, and toss a glance at Sylvia watching us over her shoulder.
"And who told you that?"
I take a piece of cheese from my plate just to keep my hands busy, to keep calm. "It was I, my love." Sylvia turns from the stove. "I shared the tale of our meeting and all that entailed." She closes her eyes. Her chin falls to her chest so that the tips of her pointed ears poke through her long blonde hair. "She was curious and has the right to know." The cheese sticks to my throat and I cough.
"Yo, what?"
No voice, no matter how sweet, could drain the poison from those words.
"How could ya?"
I don't know what to say.
They say elves and dragons and what don't exist. They teach you that and yarn a not but story. Myth. If she goes talking, it they seize her ears.
You would allow fear to rob her of the truth? Her heritage, she interrupts. That she should never know the courage of her father's heart? The human who walked among fae, who slew dragons that my people might endure? Would you truly wish that she know only you as this? Sylvia waves her hand to the bag waiting for me by the door. My chisels and mallets. A simple mortal? Merely the instructor woodcarver?
But you know what they'll do.
They'll kill her. My precious girl. They'll take her to the Institute. Dissect her. Sylvia and Ariana both.
Let her be shamed of me and safe. Safe and happy. That's all's I want.
Sylvia glares at me with eyes I've not seen in years. Not since I laid down my sword. And even then, only in battle. George, look at our daughter. Swallowing hard, I take in Ariana's blonde curls, her pudgy cheeks and pointed ears, her mischievous elven eyes. Eyes that see more than mine. Ears that hear more than spoken, as elves always do. My heart cracks just looking at her. My girl. All that is best in me and Sylvia. I would die for her. No, I would live for her. How old is she, George? Tears burning my eyes, I stretch out my hand and cup her tiny cheek, but I don't answer. 10 years I've lived with you in the mortal realm. 12 I've been your wife, and not once have any discovered who or what I am, though I do not age. Do you suppose this is by accident, my love? She steps closer. Humans see what they wish, not what is, especially when charmed by elven magic. Magic. The word cuts through my heart like a dagger. She's been using magic to stay hidden, not cunning.
But that's just it.
I take my hand from Ariana's cheek. Every species plays its part in the grand design. Every tick, every mosquito, field mouse, and heron has a role to play. And dragons are the conduit between magic and the minds of men. That same energy that lights the sun and stars, that congeals to form matter, only to dissipate and become light or heat once more. Without that link, without dragons, here in this world, men's sense of wonder has begun to fade. Their minds harden, and now they see only the material. Though they wield magic, it holds no mystery, no wonder. They explain it away, call it science, and their hearts grow cold, as mechanized as the steam-powered abominations they create. And the power it holds over them fades. It cannot protect her from them, not forever. I turn my head toward my wife, desperate to keep the tears from my voice. She's been relying on a fading hope, a glass crutch.
There ain't no more dragons here. Ain't you felt it?
She flinches and my fingers go numb. She has noticed. Heard it in the echoing thump of machines churning away where magic once held sway. In the little whistles the horseless wagons make when they roll by. Likely, she's seen it in the way the miller squints at her when she goes to buy flour. As if he can sense something's off. Like he knows he's dreaming and trying to wake up. Unable to look me in the eye, she blinks and drops her gaze to the floor. But it's what I say next, what I must say, that buries the dagger in her heart and mine.
You shouldn't have relied on magic but cunning. You should have stayed hidden, secret.
But it's too late for that now. They have to leave. Return to Faerie, to her homeland. There is no other choice. Sensing what I left unspoken, Sylvia's eyes lock on mine. I'll not abandon you. Magic hasn't gone from them completely. Not yet. We have time. Enough, perhaps, for you to live out your days.
At the thought of my death, her lips tremble and she loses her words for a moment.
For you to be happy.
Then we may depart.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Game night's fun until someone spends 5 minutes lining up one shot. Chalk, breathe, re-chalk. Still aiming. While they figure it out, I fire up Chumba Casino. I can spin anywhere, anytime, and there's always a new social casino game every week. Spins happen way faster than that shot. Play now at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Lass. I push back from the table, stand, and take her in my arms.
It could be as you say, or it could fall out in a month.
I've been a fool. A blind, selfish fool. I should have noticed what she was doing. Maybe I did and didn't see because I didn't want to. Idiot that I am.
I'll not risk you. Either of you. Not for me. You need to be going home.
There is no other option. Her hands slip under my arms and up my back. Come with us. But her words are but a wish. To kill a dragon for any reason is the worst crime any creature can commit. To return to that realm, to enter that portal, means death. She knows this.
Would that I could, darling.
But it's not possible. It's not fair. Her face presses into my shoulder. He would have killed us all. And no elf, not one, would have loosed a single arrow to save us. No, they wouldn't have. I held her close, kiss her hair. Neither did a single elf speak on my behalf at trial. Only her, only Sylvia raised her voice against the council. I can still see her standing there amidst the ancient cedars, jaws set, chest pushed out, hands balled to fists, cursing them for cowards, shaming them for allowing a mortal to face a foe they dared not, then ordering his death. He who killed that they may live. It was her father that silenced her. He who stepped forward and told the council that I had stolen the amulet of Ligorian, that her heart was under my power and her words not her own. He said that I should indeed be executed as the law demanded, but for his daughter's sake, ask that I be persuaded to reveal the amulet's hiding place so that her heart may be freed. I'll never forget the hate that played across her face, the way her body shook with rage when she slapped him and cursed his blood in her veins, when she disowned him. But all she did was make his assertion all the more convincing. Elves are immortal, humans finite. No elf in their right mind would choose a man over their own kin. It was incontrovertible proof she was bewitched. And so, despite her efforts, judgment was given, and I was led away, deep beneath the earth, into utter darkness, to await my torture and death. It was Sylvia's voice that called to me from within that darkness, her hands that loosed my chains and led me from the dungeon. She, who guided me through paths unseen, past the guards and out of the city, all the way to the mortal realm, beyond their reach. She, Sylvia, my wife, who turned her back on her people, her home, her family, for me, for love. Eyes burning, I bury my face in her hair. I won't keep her here to be captured. I won't let the scientists at the Institute have her, or Ariana. I'll go to hell first.
No. It's not fair.
I kiss the point of her ear.
But that's the truth of it.
Pulling back, I cradle her face between my palms and gaze deep into her tear-stained eyes. I'm no wizard, but I learned a great deal in my dealings with the elves. I know how this goes. Once the spell's gone, once the magic fades, everything it's altered will revert back to normal. Every memory, every voice inflection it muted, every vision it blurred or covered, all of it will return. All our friends, our neighbors, vendors and customers, students and fellow teachers. Everyone will remember who and what they saw. that Sylvia and Ariana are elves, and they'll know I harbored them. The stories will spread that elves do exist, that they live for years hiding among men. Stories that will reach the ears of the Institute, and they will come for me. For them. I'm such a fool.
If you love me, you'll keep her daughter safe. Go home, lass.
Her lips tremble. And what shall I tell them when we arrive? I did not simply leave, George. They will not welcome me, let alone a half-breed. Her gaze flicks to Ariana, watching us in silence. I mean our daughter.
Ain't your fault, lass.
I swallow hard, remembering the lie her father used to spare her.
I stole that amulet of Lagrorian, remember? Yonder my power.
Her face hardens. You can't possibly be serious. I brush away a tear from her cheek with my thumb.
It be the only way.
You would have me lie, shame you?
But it's not a lie. I did steal the amulet.
I offer her a slight smirk.
And you are under my spell of a fashion.
She shakes her face free of my hands. No, I stole the amulet, not you. I was never under any spell. I loved you then as I do now, and always shall. For who you are.
And I,
gaze into one eye, then the other, and nod toward Ariana, never taking my eyes from hers.
Both of you, more than life itself. I want you both to live, on and on, forever, as you're meant to. Happy. You cannot do that here, not anymore. If you loves me, like I knows you do, you'll do this. You needs to go.
She glances back at Ariana, at me, and her head drops into a slow nod. I know, but that it's come to this. Her fingers go to the gold chain around her neck. This was never my intention. Slowly, she slips the amulet of Lagorian from beneath her bodice. I only pray that when the magic's gone, you'll continue to think well of me. I mumble,
always, my love, always.
And the vision fades. A collage of emotions flood through my mind as my thoughts separate from his, from George's. Images flash before my eyes in rapid succession. Soldiers in golden armor binding my hands, beating me with clubs. The pain comes so fast. I scream, throw up my hands, and it's gone. Everything goes dark. Dark as the pit the elves banished me to. A bright light flashes overhead. I wince and twist my hands against the shackles locked around my wrists, blinded by the light reflected off the polished brass walls all around me.
And where did she go, this she-elf who enchanted you?
Blinking against the glare, my gaze follows the sound of the voice to an old man watching me from above, seated behind the top of the wall, his face more mechanical than flesh. One of the professors, mechanical abominations. And he's not alone. From the look of it, the entire council's here. I glare at each face in turn, then spit on the floor.
Home.
The old man who spoke's beard wags. He adjusts a lever on the side of his eyepiece. The lens extends and his brow furrows.
And where would the portal they used be located? Closed.
I sniff.
That is not what I asked. Please keep your answers pertinent. It will spare you further torment.
Torture. It's such a tired cliche. I almost laugh. Almost. Knowing you're the one about to be tortured kills the joke entirely. Still, the irony of my response is just as thick. At that, I do smile. They'll get no more from me. Not one word. A hiss of steam sighs above and to my right, drawing my attention to a different professor, an old man with no beard and a brass jaw.
It appears we are wasting our time here, Cornelius. The magic may have gone, and I dare say he shows little sign of genuine affection for the elf,
but I believe he bears considerable fondness and therefore loyalty to her child. He will not divulge any information he feels may jeopardize her safety, perhaps with adequate vivisection, but even then the results would prove unreliable.
The man with the eyepiece, Cornelius, nods.
I concur.
He turns his attention to the other old men, all with their own unique mechanized pieces.
Are all in agreement?
A moment passes as each man nods or whispers their assent.
Then the Institute hereby sentences you to 5 years in the pits of sorrow. You shall be labeled a pedophile by the media. Your wife caught you in the act of violating your daughter. You murdered her and concocted this outlandish story of elves and dragons in an addled attempt to cover your guilt.
He leans forward, again fixes me with his eyepiece, and his voice deepens, becomes even more mechanical.
That should ensure your silence, should you survive the pit.
He waves a skeletal brass hand, summoning the guards.
Take him away.
Again, George's memories fade from my mind. Random flashes. A few desperate fights with other prisoners linger on. Several failed escape attempts, and the visions cease entirely. The scent of the forest wafts in around me. The soft rustle of leaves, the cool damp grass underfoot, and I'm me again. Faye again. A banished Shay girl. I blink at the man, George, still frozen in time, and consider everything I saw before my spell ends, before time resumes its march. He's not what I supposed. He's an innocent man, the victim of elven sorcery and human prejudice. I take in the scars on his face, remember the sting of each blow that struck him, and the fear that gripped him as he fought. Hated by all. Reviled as a violator of children. False charges that fit his manner, the way he stared at me, at all little girls, but not out of lust, out of love, out of the pain of losing his daughter, the empty hole ripped into his soul.
George. She cocks her head to the side as she stares at me, hands folded behind her skirt. One eye half closed, lips puckered and pushed to the side, as if lost in thought. It's the same look Sylvia gave me the day we met, the day I stepped into that ring of mushrooms and found myself in another world, as if she could see into my soul. It's time what makes the wrinkles, I repeat, and stare out over the surface of the pond.
No.
She steps up beside me, wraps her arms around my legs and lays her head against my hip.
Not time, the journey.
I glance down at her golden head laid against my belt, just like Ariana used to do. Tears blur my vision, and without thinking, I pat her shoulder. Ariana, wherever she is, wherever Sylvia brought her, I hope she found the happiness she deserves, that they both did. The girl rolls her head back and smiles up at me.
I remind you of her, don't I?
My hand jumps from her shoulder.
Who? Your daughter, Ariana.
I nod. I thought you do, lass. My thoughts come in jumbled waves, but one thing I do know, I never mentioned my daughter. Haven't spoken her name aloud since my hearing before the council. How do you know? She cuts me off with a laugh.
I look like her and she like me. Don't you wonder how this could be?
Her voice. I take another step back. The rhymes. You're a fae. The violet eyes, the way she moves. Hell, the way her voice sings every damned word she says. I don't know how I didn't see it before. She lifts the hem of her skirt and dips into a curtsy.
Truth be known and truth it be, but friendship wish for you and me.
Her words echo in my ears, pounding like a drum against the inside of my skull. I've dealt with fae before, and they aren't evil. At least they don't hate humans.
but they don't see us as particularly important either. They're more like kids, but immortal, and they see us like ants. To them, our lives are short and inconsequential, and like any kid around an ant, they're just as likely to help us out of a mud puddle as burn us with an eyeglass. Mostly, they ignore our existence entirely. If they don't, the trick is figuring out why and what they're after. And quick, because they sure as hell aren't safe. Friends, you say? I massage my temples, desperate to clear the cotton from my mind, to remember everything I can about the Fae, how to deal with them. But I can't get past one simple fact. I'm not in Faerie. The Fae left Earth years ago. She shouldn't even be here. But here she is. If I could just think. She smiles an impish grin and nods excitedly.
Friends indeed, for friends we are. A boon I bring you from afar.
Damn it, this could go either way. It could be her idea of a laugh to bless me with fish scales or the ears of an ass, or it could be something good. But then she might expect me to do or give her something impossible in return. There's no way to tell. But if I refuse and she takes it as an insult, well, then I'm really screwed. Friends, it is then. Keeping my face as placid as I can manage, I smile. And friends don't hurt each other, does they?
In darkest need, it's hope they seed,
she sings, half laughing. My jaw relaxes. Good to know. At least it sounds promising. What's this boon of yarn? With a wink, she turns on her heel and skips to the edge of the pond, past the cattails, and bends down out of sight.
Your heart is known your pain I've felt, and so too taste your longing.
She stands up, a saucer in one hand and a small silver mirror in the other.
Your daughter gone, your heart to melt, and so your soul is calling.
She dumps the saucer into the pond, steps through the cocktails and onto the shore.
But all's not lost, for much I see, and in this mirror render. You wish to know where she's gone, and if she's living tender. This I give, and more beside, for love's bond ne'er is breaking. I pull red thread, and off we go, whate'er the world betide.
She holds out the mirror to me.
Look therein, for there you'll find for what your heart is longing. And with that done, away we go, to find your daughter, darling.
My temple pinches. God, Fae and their infernal rhyming. How did I forget about the rhyming? Closing my eyes, I tried to decipher what she's saying. So as I look in your mirror and I'll see Ariana. My eyes burst open. And you'll take me to her? She gives a single nod.
That's my boon and word beside. A truer vow you shall not find.
Stretching out my hand, I reach for the mirror. I need to see her, if only one last time. But then my hand stops. Fae promises me nothing, not without blood. Will you swear to it? The girl's smile widens. She slips the saucer into one of her pockets of her vest and draws out a little leather case. Opening it, she removes a sewing needle and pricks the middle finger of her hand holding the mirror.
By blood I swear to take you there and never once to harm you.
She offers me the mirror and her finger, a promise she can't break. Cautiously, I take the mirror, being certain to smear her blood along my finger as I pull away. I turn it in hand and gaze into the surface. For a moment, my face looms back at me. But as I watch, it shimmers like the waves of the pond and a young elf girl comes into view. Ariana. My chest aches. She's older now, adolescent, heartbreakingly beautiful and laughing. I scan the edges of the frame, trying to see where she is, learn something about her life now. But there's nothing, only gray fog. I draw my finger down the glass, her cheek. God, look at her. My chin shakes. My girl, my beautiful girl, nearly a woman. The fee girl's voice mumbles a rhyme, something about barred windows and prison doors. It doesn't matter. I can't look away. Not from her. Not from my beloved Ariana. Nothing else matters. Not the forest vanishing around me. Not even the silver walls closing in on me on every side. Only her. Only Ariana.
Girl.
I watch in silence as tears fill his eyes, until he raises his hand and touches the surface of the glass, adding the last ingredients to the spell. Tears of longing and physical contact. Then I turn away and speak the incantation. Window bars and prison doors, yearning for what once was yours. Woe to you and woe betide, longing draw the flesh inside. Staring out across the pond, the portal to Avalon, my home, I think of mother. Of the Shea Noble she murdered for that mirror. The mirror of devoured souls. The price she paid for power. The price we both paid. For I too have given it my longings. I too have touched its surface. And so to watch George be devoured would mean I too would be drawn inside. Trapped like the hundreds of fairies I've gathered since my banishment. The souls I've sacrificed to keep the pond open. This portal active. To keep hope alive. A soft thud on the grass tells me it's complete. That George is gone. Trapped. I turn, crouch down, and pick up the mirror. Behind my own reflection, I can still make out his dim shadow staring back. Though not at me. No, at his daughter. He's beyond hope now. Powerless. Ensnared by love, by longing. Until I release or devour him. And release him I must, for blood demands it. Slipping the mirror into my vest pocket, I skip up the path toward our temporary home, a little cottage nestled in a small sunlit glade. The woodcutter's cottage we claimed as our own when we first arrived in this forsaken land. I open the door and step inside. Mother dear! She peers around the edge of one of her glass beakers, this one half full of green liquid. Yes, my dove? I close the door and weave my way around the pentagram painted on the floor, hidden under a throw rug, a safeguard against unwelcome sprites. Oh, joyous morn, my lady kind, for guess what on the pond I've found? Her lips pulling into a smirking grimace, she shakes her head. My dear, your rhymes are failing you. I nod, well aware of the toll this cursed place has taken on us both, for Mom seldom rhymes at all anymore. Tis of little worry, don't you fret. For I by pond this morning met a prize of worth within my net, one that shall restore our favor. Mother's grimace deepens. The rulers of Avalon are not so easily appeased. I'm afraid no amount of fairies will pay our debt. They demand more, much more. Not fairy bright, but mortal flesh, pure as light and just as fresh. Indeed? Mother sets her beaker on the table, holds out her hand, and motions for the mirror. Reaching in my pocket, I slip it free and lay it in her palm, beaming. "'Tis more than man, but myth beside, and fugitive from justice. The triple goddess calls us home and delivers not ill tidings. From here within lies cursed George, who slew the frosted dragon. And not just he, but his accomplice, too." I hold up my finger to show her the prick, the vow I made. For to her I now must take him. To harm him not was what I swore, and to that word I'm bonded. But you are not, O mother dear, and deals can you proffer. Truly? Mother's lips curl into a wide smile. Her eyes sparkle. The soul of the dragon slayer? A worthy price indeed. She turns her focus to the mirror. I shall contact the elders. Once we've struck a deal, then you're free to take him. Her left eyebrow raises. Tis not your fault if you are followed, now is it? I shake my head, simply bursting with joy. Nay, I swore not to harm him only, never to cover my trail.
not to serve as his accomplice.
At last,
Mother sighs. Her whole body relaxes. Are you ready to go home, my little huntress? I nod, squealing with laughter. I am more than ready. It's been far, far too long.
I hope you enjoyed Prey, written by Dirk Stevens and performed by Paul J. McSorley. Well, friends, our weekly descent into the depths has just about come to a close. But before we go, I'd like to take a moment to thank you for joining us tonight and remind you to take a moment to stop by our iTunes page and leave Chilling Tales for Dark Nights a 5-star review and a kind word. And follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram if you haven't already. And of course, subscribe to us on YouTube, where you can find an archive of our work going back to 2012. And consider signing up as a patron at our website, chillingtalesfordarknights.com, to show your support and get all of our content ad-free. I'm your host of the evening, Paul J. McSorley, and it's been a pleasure. Tune in again next week when we once again turn off the lights and turn on the dark. Sweet dreams, listener. Sweet dreams.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory Lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See TNCs 21+. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.